This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 333, Space LARP. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a wonderful Friday, getting ready for a fun weekend of what am I going to do this weekend? I'm going to do nothing, but I know what I am looking forward to, and that is spending the next half hour with my friend and co-host, Michael Martin, on this episode of GamesAtWork.biz. Michael, how are you?
I am 333-ing.
Woohoo! It was funny, when the number came up earlier, I was like, no, it's not 333.
Yeah,
we're not recording this at 3:33. What are you talking about?
No, of course not. But still, you know, you can divide it by three. You can divide it by 111. You know, there's all kinds of good stuff you can do.
This divide it by nine, I believe.
Yeah,
I believe you can divide it by nine because if you add it up,
yep,
equals nine. And if I remember, wasn't that one of the shortcuts on certain multipliers? If you can add the numbers up, there are certain numbers that anyway. Nine may not be one, and I know our huge contingent of math nerds who listen to the podcast will tell me on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz if my math memory is wrong.
Well, at the very least, it does work. So, you know, we're in good shape.
Okay, good.
So let's start with some math nerdy stuff and some space nerdy stuff and some, you know, examples of math and space and big numbers and big time. And that is, for those of you who really wanted to go to Mars, but didn't want the inconvenience and hassle of space travel, you know what you could do? You could sign up and apply to go into essentially a bubble for a year.
Yes.
And you could be one of those subjects that kind of tests out how humans act and interact. This seems, again, like one of those TV shows, a reality TV show about do you get voted out of the bubble or not?
Yeah, well, what's really cool about this... and cool as in, God, this would be miserably hot, right? It's four people constrained to, I think it was 1,200 or 1,500 square feet, total living space.
Yeah. Everybody gets their own room, though.
Everyone gets their own room in a shared kind of communal area. And I was trying to remember, I think our first house that we got was slightly smaller than that. I think it was 1,400 square feet, and that was for two people. And I, you know, four people, I think that's still a lot of space. The problem is, it doesn't matter what happens in there. You know, if you don't like what they give you to eat, tough noogies, right? If you don't have a minimum of 1,000 hours of pilot in command on a jet aircraft experience, or key related STEM skills at a professional level, you don't even get to sign up.
Yep.
Right? So
you qualify, though.
I think this is
actually
really cool.
You qualify.
I do.
I qualify.
I've played over 1,000 hours flying on flight simulator. and I actually do qualify in all aspects.
Yeah. Including the flight?
Not the flight. And, oh, you know what? No, my master's is not in a STEM degree.
Yeah, but that's okay. You've got relevant experience, so there is a relevant experience piece.
It's specific. Oh, it can also be met. Yeah, you're right. 2 years of work towards a doctoral. Nope, don't got that. A completed doctoral. Nope. Completion of a nationally recognized test pilot. No, I don't. If you look at the, I don't qualify.
Well, I beg to differ. There is this little star. You know, NASA's good about the stars. It says the master's degree requirement can also be met by, and then lists a bunch of other stuff. So you do qualify.
Yes, and those three things are work towards a doctorate, a completed doctorate, or test pilot school program. Either that, or this is a typical form that has the asterisk in the wrong place.
Yeah, that's perhaps
it's structured weird. It says it right after the one thing, and then it has these other qualifications. So I don't know. Maybe I do qualify. You know what? I'll find out when they call me and let me know that I've made the program.
Yeah. Then I'll
let you know
what
actual minimum requirements are. Because I'm sure if I get it, it's minimum.
So I saw this and I was kind of impressed by it. I also thought the little cutesy example, the images of the people were kind of fun there too. And naturally this makes sense, right? You want to experiment terrestrially before you experiment in a spot where it's really hard to get there. And there were further requirements around your health and about nutritional supplements too, that if you're on various and sundry medications, you're automatically excluded because I guess there's not a local pharmacy on Mars that you could go and pick them up.
And one of the interesting things about all of this, though, is it's not just the time you're on Mars, right? The whole thing is, how do you handle this isolation?
Yeah.
And it's the trip to Mars, the time on Mars, and the trip back. And early on in the Apollo missions, they did a lot of work on understanding the behavioral characteristics of people in enclosed areas for long periods of times with one or two other individuals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing then was the personality of a test pilot. Right?
Oh.
Military test pilot, which is where they got them from, actually lended itself to that. Think about Navy submariners, right?
Oh. Yep.
You know, they're used to closed areas, constrained space with a limited group of interactions with people. When you start looking at these longer term missions where you want to do more than just prove that you can fly, where you want to do the other scientific experiences and experiments, it's important to not just assume that test pilots can meet your needs, right? You need other STEM skills who may not have the traditional test pilot personalities and characteristics. So understanding that interaction is going to be key. And this is a great way to do it, I think. I think it's really cool.
Well, the nifty thing here, too, is that apparently there is compensation available. They don't say what it is, but I guess if you move through the process and get through the pre-flight, checklists and the physicals and everything like that, they'll tell you. But let's just say, for example, that you applied and you didn't make it, but you still want to have that space experience, right?
Yes. Yes.
So we've talked about this before. You could have a lovely hotel experience at Walt Disney World on the Galactic Star Cruiser. However, for a family of four, instead of them paying you, which, Disney doesn't pay you to come to their theme parks, you would pay them. And the price point, I've read through this and it's like, oh my gosh, is it's $5,999 for four guests. I'm sure there's tax and fees and maybe a few other things that go into it that just maybe nudge you over into that $6,000 range. Maybe, right?
Yeah. That's for a weekend.
A weekend. 2 days. Yes.
2 days. and if it's just like you and your significant other, it's almost $5,000. It's $4,809.
Yep. So,
and I've spent a lot of money at hotel rooms, right? for work, being in Vegas where the room was like $600 a night. I guess I didn't spend it. Work did. My wife and I went on a great New Year's Eve weekend up in Asheville at the Grove Park during the financial meltdown, and we got basically the presidential suite for less than $400 a night.
Wow.
Which was the 1500 square feet of the space thing?
Yeah.
That was about the size of the room suite that we had.
Oh, that's okay then.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was really, really nice. So spending $6,000 or let's say $5,000 just for the two of us.
Yeah.
For two nights at a Disney resort, I'm sorry, that does seem a little steep.
Well, it might be, but I would say it would behoove you to go and find extra friends because if you charge them a per person rate, just those two extra friends could do wonders to knock down your price point.
Oh yeah.
So yeah,
and just to totally round out the experience, right? I think we talked about the Disney Magic Bands before.
Yes.
You are required to use those here. So if you are uncomfortable with an IoT tracker strapped to your wrist to know everything you've done during those 2 days at $6,000, you may not want to sign up for this.
So aside from the price point, the really intriguing thing for me here is that this is a whole other level of entertainment that's immersive to the nth degree, right? You go in there, your kids do lightsaber training, you participate in missions, you can go to Galaxy's Edge. Now, again, we could discuss is it worth it? But the intriguing thing around all this is that level of participation and immersion that is wholly different than any other experience to date, right?
Yeah. I mean, and that is the key. You're not just buying a hotel room with some space sheets, right?
and no pool, as the article puts, right?
Right. You're buying a weekend experience. It will be interesting to see when the reviews come out of people who have been wined and dined and given the suite for the weekend to write the articles about that. And it will be interesting to see the differences between the basic package, which is the $6,000 for a family of four, and the larger suites. I mean, I can imagine you get like Vader's room, which actually would be horrible if you think about it. Because remember, Vader had that little egg thing that he sat in.
Yeah, that was his meditation chamber.
His meditation chamber. So it would be like really austere and claustrophobic. And for that, you'd pay extra.
Yeah, well, for some people, that's the deal. Now, okay, yes. If you don't want to go to space, you know, either terrestrially or not, and you don't want to pay this amount of money, you know, maybe we can start going a little virtually, which we got a few stories on this front. And one that kind of caught the attention here is a Wired article about some amazing Minecraft builds that didn't just materialize overnight, right? From the Tolkien experience around Middle Earth to Westeros to a whole range of other things. Amazing level of builds in Minecraft that just took armies of people lots of time to go get this done.
Yeah, what's amazing to me when I saw this article was they don't give you the perspective of where the camera is, mm-hmm. right? Because these are Minecraft is pixels, right? Everything's pixels online, if you think about it.
Prims from another era, perhaps.
But these are squares.
Yep.
And to get the resolution of some of these builds, the positioning of the camera has to be really, really far back, which just shows you the size of these builds. Like there were two that really stood out for me. One, the Westeros craft one, right, which gave you King's Landing, including the Red Keep, etc., from a pretty far distance, and that just blew me away. It, from a map perspective, it's 485 square miles, okay, in Minecraft map. The other one was the Lord of the Rings one. I guess it was Minas Tirith. Is that?
Yeah.
I'm trying to find it again. No. It was Helm's Deep and Isengard. I mean, but yeah, it is Minas Tirith. Is one in the picture. That I was right. Okay, that is stunning. That is stunning. And I guess now that, you know, on the right hardware, Minecraft has enabled ray tracing, that's where these builds are really coming in, because now you can see the reflective light. You can see the way the shadows are done. It's just, to me, this is art. It's not just taking a picture and drawing it in pixels. This is true sculpture.
Very cool. Very cool. So we're seeing more and more of this sort of thing happen. This is, you know, these have been years in the making. We've seen a couple of these before, but not this level of collection. I love the Mount Olympus one too. And it, as we move through our virtual worlds, another example here that was from a concert just last week in Fortnite, if I recall correctly, the Rift Tour. And I don't remember where we got this link from. It may have been from Ian, may have been maybe Michael, you saw it. Fantastic, right? And these get, seem to get better and better and better. And there are things you can do naturally in a virtual world you just can't do otherwise, like have the star who is performing be in the middle of everybody around them who's now participating. And you can change their size so they can be like a giant or not or whatever. So very cool stuff.
What I actually found this one. Ian had our friend Ian Epred had I think gone to the event.
Yeah,
and there were a lot of people tweeting about it. I found this one on YouTube, which is actually the concert. And what I really liked about it is they enabled a bunch of games as part of the concert. So people were playing games as they're watching the concert, and that multi-level entertainment is what I found fascinating about it. And you know, I'm not a huge fan of her music. It's, and I don't necessarily dislike music, so it had a good feel for it, for the gaming aspect along with the concert aspect. Very cool.
Neato. So now let's kind of turn the Wayback Clock a little bit further back than last week. And we have an article here about a 3D banana. And being able to execute code written for which version of Windows was it? 3.1.
3.1, I think.
Yeah, 3.1, to be able to still execute it and see that this worked properly in Labyrinth. So I don't remember using this at all in the Windows environment, to be honest. But isn't it amazing that code written that far back still operates and you can still emulate and make it hum?
What I liked about this article from the Register was something, and we blew it last week. I have to say, mea culpa, we blew it. Last Friday when we were recording the show was the 30th anniversary of the world's first web page.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And we didn't bring it up on the show, so shame on us. But the other cool thing about this article was SIGGRAPH, which I remember talking to a lot of people presenting at SIGGRAPH over the years. And when I think about 30-year-old code having to do with 3D graphics, that's the really interesting part from the Microsoft example here. I remember as a elementary school student going to a technology fair and seeing these super high-end graphic workstations doing 3D line art of shuttle components. And so this is Windows 3.1, which was, what, 1991, 1993, that time period.
Yeah.
Demonstrating 3D graphics on that platform, and the code still works. It's one of the reasons why, you know, Windows is such a popular operating system. I mean, I have code still running on my Windows 11 box. That's Windows 3.1 code. And so it's really, really cool. And I'm going to have to take a look at the Labyrinth VRML browser, right? Mm-hmm. The virtual reality, I can't remember what the ML stands for. It's not machine language, I don't think, browser to check it out. But this is cool. It's neat to see these little pieces of history still working.
Yeah, absolutely is. So now we're kind of zinging back and forth between times. We've got a blog post here from Niantic, published on August the 10th, which is just a couple of days ago here from our recording time, riffing on the nature of the brand new metaverse, which has been discussed already in plenty of ways, makes lots of references that we've been using in the past too, from everything from William Gibson and Neal Stephenson and Ernst Klein and all these famous authors who are envisioning what they're envisioning, but really looking at this through the lens of what Niantic's been able to do with Ingress and Pokemon and Go and all the rest like this about setting up a build the metaverse as it should be built, right? The future doesn't have to be a dystopian nightmare. It can be something much, much better. And I applaud them. I think they're on the right track. This is something that we've been talking about here plenty of times for a long time. More to it that we could probably dig out of this particular article, but those were the things that I took away from it pretty high level. Michael, anything that you would add to that too?
No, I think you hit it. I do like the article. It's well written, and I find it important to kind of figure out how to make these interconnected systems to be a positive thing and not just an overload. And the fact that he starts off with the basic idea that we're kind of living in the metaverse right now. We go from Zoom to WebEx to, you know, pick your next thing, and it's kind of just grinding. And when you go out into the future of the metaverse, where it's out and about and much more natural, I think that's interesting. And while you were talking, it got me thinking about a song by the group OMD that came out a few years ago.
Oh.
That kept going, the future is, or the future will be, the future will be. And as we talk about the future, I'm betting that many people don't think that it will be what OMD suggested, which is the future will be silent. And we'll have a link to that song in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think it's a great song.
Definitely, definitely. I'm a big OMD fan myself. We had a tweet that came our way from our friend Ian that we mentioned just a couple of moments ago, and this is around NVIDIA Canvas. And I remember we brought this up on an earlier episode. I actually tried to download it, but then again, it is unfortunately Windows only code, so that wasn't working for me. But the neat thing about it is that you're able to draw on this canvas using this NVIDIA code, which will then generate landscapes for you, mountains, rivers, trees, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, Michael, just maybe to tie this backwards and forwards, wouldn't it be really cool to use this to create the virtual worlds that and the metaverse that we want to, whether it is exhibited in Minecraft or comes through Niantic or whatever, and just use this instead of years of labor and painstaking, handcrafted, pixel by pixel approach over 400 miles and more of space?
Yeah, I did not try to download it. I should do that now. I mean, not now. I mean,
No, not now. No,
but later now.
Later now. In the future.
In the future, when I'm silent. very cool. Thank you, Ian. As you said, we talked about this a while back. Seeing that example is just, again, really cool.
Yep, love it. So moving on to platforms, right? So we've talked about metaverses as many kinds of platforms. Michael, there's a platform that you were telling me in the pre-show you'd signed up for an early beta on called Contact. And this is not show or the movie Contact.
This is a startup created by Maisie Williams from Game of Thrones fame and a few others to really address the creator, the digital creator. It's a platform for digital creators. And when it first started off, I want to say it was like 2 years ago. It just seemed like a social network for creators, and you could follow key creators that you like, right? And I didn't really know where it was going. And probably a few months ago, maybe 6 months ago, they sent a thing out saying, hey, I will interpret what they sent. We figured out our business model.
Oh, that's cool.
We are going to charge you, and I think it was $10 a month, to get creator lessons.
Oh, right? So, like master classes.
Like master classes by creators for other creators. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great idea. I've really not done much with it after that. And I think my account is now degraded to a nothing account.
Oh.
Because I wasn't going to keep using it. I didn't use it much in the first place. It was more for interest than anything else. But I do think it's interesting that you'll be able to showcase what you do. You'll be able to learn from others, and you'll be able to use it as a platform for providing work for creators. So think of it as a booking platform. Mm-hmm. So you identify people who have the skills that you need, and you book them through that platform. So
kind of a creator-driven Angie's List.
Yeah, and it's funny because Adobe has a similar thing. When you install the Adobe Suite, Adobe has a platform built into its Creative Suite for showcasing your creations and identifying and discovering other creators and communicating with them too. What I did not see in the Adobe one was the booking platform aspect, mm-hmm. and the payment that can go in there. So,
okay.
Very cool. I think this is a great idea. If you're a serious creator, it may be something of interest to you.
Very cool. All right. So we've got a bit of a hodgepodge, a smorgasbord, maybe even of various other topics that we'll bounce over, you know, fairly quickly. So one is an article I found about a very intriguing use of AirTags to find a stolen electric scooter. So in this case, a particular individual I thought was super clever did two things, put two AirTags, not one, but two, one to be found, one that was hidden just a little bit more, covered over with black tape, so it wasn't discovered right away, and was able to help recover their scooter. And of course, this particular article does make the point of don't take law enforcement into your own hands. Which is an important thing, you know, especially with people that are potentially dangerous, and this gives you a how-to. So that was kind of cool.
Yes. Very cool.
Next one, Michael, this came from you, although I saw it as well, about dragons. And I know you love dragons.
I'm a huge dragon fan. And this is the Petrosaur, I think is how you pronounce it. Petrosaur.
We'll go with that.
Which is a flying reptile from the dinosaur age, and they've discovered a fossil on it in Australia, and it is the closest thing to what a dragon might actually have looked like if they existed. This is terrifying, and you know, huge leathery wingspan, giant fang-filled mouth. And what they suggested was that they would fly over the ocean, dip their beak or mouth into the water, and basically pick up and bite sharks in half.
Ooh, nifty.
Yeah, I mean, shark meat. So very, very cool. I had to share this one, being a dragon fan. And it does tie in quite nicely with Contact, given that that was from Game of Thrones. Which had dragons.
Which had dragons, yeah. So, not to continue the dragon theme directly, because I was always a careful driver, and I never did drag racing in my Mazda 626 GT Turbo, but I did enjoy the story of the next article, which is a really cool car technology that never caught on. And the thing is that particular car that I had...
Hansel?
No, the Mazda 626 GT Turbo is what I had. Enormous torque steer, so it could have been Dragon if I needed to. But it has this button around the vents, which would allow the vents to oscillate. So the button says swing. And what it does is that it makes the vents swing back and forth and give nice air conditioning or heat to both of the front passengers, which I always thought was an enormously cool thing.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right, next interesting little bit of tech is Razer, who has got, and didn't we talk about this once before too, an RGB face mask?
I'm going to bridge why this is even in the lineup.
Yeah, do.
So we did talk about this. This came out at CES, and it was one of those many different face masks that were out there where people were creating cool gaming and tech-related face masks during the pandemic, which is continuing. And everyone's like, well, no one's actually going to make these. Well. Razer has announced their Zephyr face mask is coming out in beta. I have signed up for the beta. I don't know if I'll get it. I told them about our massive audience here at gamesatwork.biz and how we are a gaming-focused technology podcast. And I would gladly do a review of said face mask for the show.
And would we publicize it on the show? Like, would we talk about the Razer Zephyr mask, perhaps?
I would. Yeah. I would. And I'm sure you guys would talk about it, too, and ask me questions. The really cool thing about this is it has a clear face mouth area. It has built-in speakers and a microphone, replaceable filters, and so that you can be heard easily and not muffled. You can have the appropriate protection, and it's by Razer. Come on,
yeah.
The gaming company for like gaming tech that does all kinds of cool stuff. So, this was originally called Project Hazel, if you remember, and I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I hope I get to play with it.
And Zephyr is a much more appropriate name for a project like this, given the meaning of its like the magic wind. Very appropriate for breathing and that sort of thing.
Magic wind, which would go back and forth in a Mazda 626 GTO Turbo.
Yeah, see, there you go. All right, we're going to end with a couple of points about current entertainment technology. One is, Michael, something you'd found, at least I think you found it from Slash Film, around Pixar and using advanced animation to help make costumes and more.
Anyone who follows our podcast and knows our interest in 3D modeling and things of that nature, just watch the first video, especially about the hair in the movie Brave.
Yep. Give it a shot.
About that one.
Perfect. The one I will talk about, at least for a second, is a Dorkside. Yes, that's the name of the site there, too. I love it. Talking about The Bad Batch, which is one of the Disney Plus properties on the clone troopers, a group of them that were a bad batch, so to speak. And what I liked about this, for those of you who are long-running Star Wars fans, this is a bit of a rant about one particular character in this particular show who the author says does not deserve a redemption quality or a redemption moment. And Star Wars is full of these moments where Darth Vader sacrifices himself at the last moment, turns back to the light, and you've got the whole Kylo Ren scenario and da-da-da-da-da. And so this one is a fervent hope that in the final episode of The Bad Batch that Crosshair, one of the characters, should not get a redemption moment. We will see later tonight when that drops and how that goes.
Yeah, I'm only halfway through the season, so the fact that he even talks about this.
Oh, it was foreshadowed plenty of times. We have not
no
done
spoilers.
Anything.
No
spoilers. And we don't know yet what's going to happen on tonight's show.
We don't know.
We don't know. I can't we even spoil know. It, even though I would want to.
But the good news is, one thing we do know.
Yeah.
Is the Animaniacs are back with season 2 very soon.
Yes. Yes, and you highlighted this not so long ago, and that was like, hey, this is good, let's take a look at it. And I got a notification yesterday, and I watched yesterday, that the new Star Trek Season 2 of Below Decks is on, and I watched the first episode of Season 2, which is like, that's pretty darn cool.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet. I knew it was coming this week, and I have not seen it yet.
So lots to watch, entertainment-wise, peoples. So, fire up your favorite streaming service and devices and buckle up and breathe carefully.
And if you are in a country that does not get these, why don't you drop us a note? Or even better, post it to our Twitter account at games@work_biz, or How about this? Rate us 5 stars on your favorite podcatcher and then write a little note about which shows we talk about that you don't get to watch. We would love to hear from you.
That's just tormenting our listener or listeners.
No, it's promoting our show.
Oh, okay.
Promote the show.
I can't see these shows, and you guys
keep talking
about
them. You tell me all this cool stuff. We're so excited to watch it, and I can't.
All right. Well, if you're feeling totally insane-y, now you know what to do. All right.
That's right.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we're enjoying doing this with and for you, and we will see you again next time. See ya.
Bye. You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.